Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and science and spirituality and all those interesting subjects. Today we're going to talk about the spiritual use of force. Now, a lot of people might say, oh, force, that can't be spiritual. Well, that's why we're talking about it, because it sometimes is needed and sometimes is spiritual, and many times it isn't. So we have to be able to understand what we're talking about when we use those words. And if you would like to have an input into this subject, hey, give us a call. 877-876-5227 in the U.S., 888-815-9756 in Canada, and I'd love to hear from you while we're on the air. Okay, so let me also mention that last week we did a show that was on spirit. What is spirit, and what does it mean to be spiritual? But I was surprised a lot of people found that to be quite interesting, and so that's great. I'm glad to hear that, and for all of you who said, hey, great show, thank you very much. And we will continue to do shows like that, hopefully to bring a little more, we'll say, light, if that can be done through this kind of medium. Now, let me define for you what I mean by force, because many people have a lot of different ideas about force. Force is where one kind of energy, okay, is affecting another kind of energy. And when I say kind, energy can be of the same frequency but moving in a different direction, and therefore that produces a different kind to the energy and makes it a different element to energy itself, and consequently you have a force that could be developed. So forces oftentimes are related to not only their amount of energy and not only to the frequency of the energy. Frequency has to do with, like, cycles. It has to do with time issues and how the energy is represented in time and space. But the most, I'll say, important element for people usually in determining force is the direction of energy. Some people call it phase. And so if the direction of the energies are different, that can cause a difference. So the cycles of an energy and the amplitude or amount of an energy has a lot to do with its overall characteristics, and they can be quite different from each other. When two energies are very different, they can develop into a force. But again, the most common thing seems to be not so much that issue, although that can be, as it is the direction. So when you change the direction of an energy and you have one energy moving one way and another direction moving a different way, you end up with forces. Okay, so that's kind of like a physics explanation. How does this apply in the real world for us, for human beings and for sentient beings in general, and how does it deal with beings that aren't so sentient and for non-sentient living things and for unliving things? How does it affect all of that? Well, interestingly, the greater the spiritual thought and spiritual direction to any movement. Okay, so anytime something is being controlled by spiritual thought, there's an issue of direction for that movement itself. The less there is of force usually represented. And that's true as we, human beings, become more spiritual in our life. And since we talked about spirit from last week, if those of you who aren't familiar with that, you could go back and listen to that show, you know, and you say, oh, now I understand what he's saying in this show. I'm not going to recover the subject, but it should give you some then understanding of how this week fits into last week even. Okay, so we as human beings, as we get more spiritual in the way we live, we reduce the amount of force, and I'll explain how that happens in a couple minutes, but in terms of less spiritual people and less spiritual life in general, they are more controlled and more affected and more influenced by forces. And if we deal with the non-living part of our universe, the parts that we say are pre-life, like eventually they'll come together and become alive, but right now it's a bunch of rocks and it's a bunch of chemicals and it's a bunch of this type of energy or that type of energy, but with no ability to think and no thought that can be represented on an individual scale. There's some thought behind it because everything in the universe is connected to our Creator, and our Creator is using thought. But nonetheless, the individual elements do not have this thought going on in them. And so, as a result, we could say they're not alive by our standards. And consequently, they have the greatest amount of forces. Yeah. So if you go to, like, the mineral part of nature, you're going to find a lot more going on with forces in that arena than you are in your daily life as you walk around the planet. And that shouldn't surprise you. I mean, if you go and you look at the world around us, we could see that that is a true statement. I mean, almost anybody just doing a cursory observation on a daily basis would say, yeah, for those things that are going around me that aren't really sentient living things, they seem to be controlled almost exclusively by some kind of force in nature happening, you see. Okay, so how come this is true? We can see it. We can recognize it. We can tangibly even experience it. But what makes it so? What is it that is doing this? And there are a couple of things. The first is that business about direction. When we are directed in our Creator's direction, which is spiritual, that's spiritual thinking, when we are doing spiritual thought, which is doing some of the directing of energy in our life, what happens is that energy is following a little bit of the thought of our Creator while we are adding to it. We're not just little soldiers marching in a row. We are doing and creating. We're co-creating with our Creator. It's just in the general direction of the thought of our Creator. And because that is going on, the direction of that thought causes a condition called inclusiveness, or increasing consciousness, or increasing givingness or love. All of those, they're all the same thing. I don't think I was saying different things on each one of those. They're just different ways of looking at it. And when something is inclusive, it makes other things become more in its own direction. So there's a commonality to some of the directiveness. There's a commonality to the planning. There's a commonality to the inclusiveness and love, meaning the givingness of each to the other. And because there's this commonality in givingness, there's a reduction in force. Force is a lack of all of those things. So as we gain force, we have a lack of givingness, inclusiveness, planning, love, all of these types of words and concepts that we as human beings have. And they all mean collectively one thing, which is this second element to thought, which is spiritual thought. And when the thought doesn't reach the spiritual level, then there is the opposite, a lack of love, a lack of inclusiveness, and a lack of common givingness. And consequently, you get forces. The forces grow from that one element more than from anything else. There are other ways that forces can grow. Forces can grow when one part of a system creates in a very different way than the other parts do. And that changes the frequency. Remember I talked about time and space? Frequency of the energies. from each other, and it changes the amounts of the energies. So when we are being very creative, but creative in ways that are very different from the ways that God tends to create and the ways that most other beings tend to create, we tend to produce more forces because we're changing the frequencies and the amounts of the energies that we're using. That's different than the givingness side. You can see that, I hope. But it produces forces as well. If we were to do both, which would be a kind of evil act, a very evil act, where we are deliberately creating, but creating against our Creator, deliberately creating against love, against givingness, against all the things that we talk, inclusiveness, that's our creation. In other words, our desire is to actually do that, our thought is to actually do that, and we accomplish some element of that. Then we produce maximum levels of force. Maximum levels of force. And why is that the case? Well, we're tripling up. Instead of just changing direction, which is one way to kind of be selfish and dark, etc., we're going to really stick it to God this time, and everybody else is following God. Instead, we're going to create something that is directly, purposefully, for the sake of destroying life and destroying elements of God. Okay? We may not say it that way, but that's what we're doing. And the results are triple, because we're changing the frequency to some odd changes, which means we're changing the time and space issues. And this gets rather complicated in physics, and I don't want to get into that part today in the show. Some other show that might be appropriate for it, but not today. But it will change our time perspective. It'll put us in a different perspective in time and space from the rest of the universe, actually. And it also causes this unusual amount to change, which we call power. So we're going to be seeking huge amounts of power while we increase the disparity of frequency, which is the time and space issues with other time and space of others that are trying to get along with each other, while we're becoming very unloving and ungiving. And that produces the most amount of darkness and true evil. The highest levels of evil can be produced that one. Wow. So I'm going through some very, we'll call it scientific explanations, a force that you maybe weren't expecting. But I'm trying to put it in a metric or quantifiable method so that we can see it rather than try to just talk about it in some, we'll call it artful but not very measurable way. I like art. I think it's great, but sometimes measures of things are important, because you're going to see, as I develop this concept throughout today's show, that if we don't have some quantifiable understanding of force, it's going to be very difficult for us to use it. And that's where the problem comes. It's that we have to be more than just artful. Artful is helpful. It helps us to understand some things, and it gives us a more quick response. But in some cases, we have to also have the ability to measure. We have to be more mental besides just more artful. Together, though, that's a great combination. All right. So I hope that I haven't lost it yet, hopefully, because I know these are difficult subjects. I always pick them, don't I? I come up with these really far-out-there ideas, but that's metaphysics, right? This is a show. This is what I'm talking about, is physics to the extreme. Where it's physics taken to the over, just over the edge of physics into metaphysics. So it's really science, it's physics, and it's metaphysics together. Hey, okay, we can go on with that. So let me continue now. Here we have a paradigm, an example of how force actually functions. And if we were to start applying this concept, and we want to use force in a spiritual way, then we need to understand how others might be using force non-spiritually. Because one of the big issues in using force is about countering or balancing the force that is non-spiritual, particularly non-spiritual force that is used by human beings, which means that it has, unfortunately, the purpose of being destructive. Some non-spiritual force in the lower kingdoms creates evolution, survival of the fittest. I mean, things that we're familiar with that seem to work okay for life at those lower levels. It doesn't work okay for human and beyond life because you have to employ spiritual issues besides just force in order to make those kinds of life forms prosper and develop closer and more to their own creator. Okay, now let's take a look at what a person is doing. I'm narrowing it more to people here. If they're going to be using force in some spiritual way, the attempt is, in almost every circumstance, to balance out a surrounding force or forces that is countermanding and being destructive to spiritual thought and actions and is producing a destruction in purpose, in freedom, in creation, while it may also be destroying love and inclusiveness and, in general, we'll say consciousness. So this is the reason that someone might entertain the idea of using spiritual force. The problem is it is not a single answer in almost every circumstance of its use. This makes it relatively difficult because something can be quantified and you just do this, do that when this happens. And unfortunately, force isn't one of them. Now, let me give an example, especially, I think, now because we were talking so conceptually. Let's talk about a police person, okay? That person is involved in an action or a number of actions pretty consistently to have to sometimes use force. They are empowered to use force in a number of ways. They can use force through their physical body. They can use force through certain weapons that they may employ. And they can use force in terms of restraints and in terms of, we'll say, avoidance or ignoring of some laws under certain circumstances that others are supposed to obey. They can use force in a whole bunch of actual, we'll say, means that normally is not used by others. But the interesting thing is, in terms of spiritual doesn't care about human laws. Spiritual applies whether there is a human law or not. It has to still meet the criteria that I tried to explain during the first part of this show. So we have to realize that although we make laws, the laws are not the controlling factor. It is really the spiritual issue, if it exists, that supports the law, that makes it work or not work. In terms of a police person, the reason most of the time the use of force is effective is because the police person is employing, behind whatever laws they may be following or rules that they've been taught or whatever, spiritual principles without breaching those spiritual principles. And we all can follow the same factors and end up with the same results. It's just that those that have been trained and given the authority to use on a regular basis these methods are usually going to do so more effectively and hopefully more spiritually. But everybody has the ability even the right to do so, at least in free countries like the United States. And this is a critical element in the use of force spiritually, is that if you don't have the freedom to be spiritual when you use force, then the use of force will almost always get you in trouble or almost always get wrong results. So that's important to recognize. So in countries where freedom is not available, and the less available it is, the more times and the more severe the lack of force, or the use of force, excuse me, will turn out into a bad circumstance. And so this is really important, because I think that a lot of people don't understand that, and it's so critically tied to us having the freedom to use force when necessary in our lives. Okay, so all of us could theoretically, if we have enough freedom, use the forces that, say, a police person has. And in so doing, or most of them, and in so doing, we can be as spiritual as they are, provided we're as adept at using the forces that we are using. Okay, part of those forces, remember, is power, because power has to do with the amount that we're using of the force. Part of it has to do with the time and space relationship of when we use the force, and that has to do with the frequency of the type of force we're using. And then the other thing, which is most important, is how we direct the force, unto whom and what we direct the force, because that's really critical. And for a police person, how does that turn out? Let's say a police person is apprehending someone who is in the commission of a crime, and the crime is both against another person and property, both together, we'll say. Someone is doing like a home invasion or something like that. Okay, so the police person employs the force in a way that is greater than, because the power, remember, greater than the power that is employed by the home invader. That's the first step. That has to do with the first part of God's own mind. It has to do with the third part of God's own mind, and it has to be used in a way which makes the other perpetrator, in this case the invader, makes them cease to use non-spiritual force. The amount is usually, I'm just going to make this up, but it's pretty close, it's usually around 3 times. So, in other words, the amount of force that the police person is going to need to use is going to take about 3 times the force in terms of quantity of the perpetrator to completely prevent the perpetrator from exercising their lack of spiritual use of force. And you might say, well, 3 times, I don't know too many. How many cops are really 3 times stronger than their adversaries? You know, it isn't just about physical strength. Remember, we have all these other things. They can use weapons. They can use restraint. They can use machines, like their police car or whatever. They can use an assistant, okay, dog, or they can have a backup person. All these things can be employed. Now, why is it 3 times? How does that come into play? Well, remember that if it's really evil or really, really bad, it could be triple, because you're adding together all three of the elements, and that's where you may have to use 3 times the force. Now, the interesting thing about this is that the 3 times the force, when it's used as power, has a very short life expectancy in terms of its effectiveness. The power, when used alone, is only effective for brief periods of time, and then it fails to become as effective as it was in its very beginning in use. So if you're going to use a lot of power, let's say you're going to have 3 times the force, you better use it fairly quickly, because its effectiveness diminishes if you don't. So you want to get the power out as fast as you're going to have to use it. Otherwise, there are some diminishing returns with this power alone. But power isn't our only bag of tricks here. That's the important thing. Power deals with the total amount. But we can go to the next level and say, well, what about the time-space issue? Okay, let's apply it to our system again. And let's look at our policeman, our police person. That person now is not only going to use three times the power possibly, but also is going to be moving in a direction away from the force of the other, the home invader criminal, and is going to be circumventing that force so that it cannot in some way disable the police person. And that includes being shot or being hit or struck or being trapped in some environment that they can't move around into easily. You see, all these things start coming into play when you start looking at it from the standpoint of time-space. And that is a critical element, and that has to do with the frequency of energy use as well. The police person may choose to use tactically a weapon of superiority that uses a higher frequency. In other words, the bullet that's coming out of their gun is moving at a much faster speed than the one coming out of the criminals. Of course, these days that might be hard to do, but that's one of the possibilities. Or maybe a criminal has a knife and the police person has a gun or something like that. Or maybe they use a different kind of tactical weapon, such as something that blinds the person temporarily by flashing and makes a big noise that kind of stuns their nervous system and at the same time peppers their lungs so they can't breathe too effectively. All those things come into play in how the time-space issue is effective. And it's actually more, for a longer period of time, effective than pure power. So power is the shortest term. And then the next thing is the time-space issue. That you may get minutes, and the power may only give you seconds, as an example, in our example with the police person and dealing with the home invader. Okay. Finally, we come to the last part of the equation, which has to do with the total direction which is employed. And direction in this situation includes having multiple parties, like you could have several different police persons working at the same time. Also, the redirection of the other non-spiritual force. Redirecting the non-spiritual force usually comes through using fear and changing the approach response of the criminal into an avoidance response. That avoidance response causes them to move in a direction that is safer because the force is moving with them and away from the police person and maybe the people that are in the house that they're trying to do something destructive to. Wow, I'm covering a huge amount here of all these physics principles and taking them down to a very, very, we'll call it mundane level. But hopefully it starts to make some sense, because if I can't explain this in a way that's operational, it won't do most of you any good. And I want this to be able to be really useful. Okay, well, we're running out of time for right now, and we've got to go to our commercial breaks. Now, we're going to have an extra commercial that's a sponsor. I'd like you to listen to that. It's going to be twice during the program today. And it'll be during this break and towards the end of the show. So listen to that, and hopefully you'll find something of interest there. And we will be back in about 3.5 minutes, give or take.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Imagine for a moment that you are transported back to 1909, 100 years ago, but you retain your memory of all the advances which occurred in 100 years. Airplanes, cell phones, the internet, TV, space travel. Now, come back to 2009. Do you think progress will stop? What will be the most significant happening of the next 100 years? Leo Kim's book, Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality, will reveal to you the new scientific revolution and the power of the mind wirelessly connected to the universe will be the event which changes our world by healing many rifts and by changing our lives. Progress will not stop, and neither will you. Get Leo Kim's book at Amazon.com or visit HealingTheRiftBook.com.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we're going to continue with the spiritual use of force. I hope you're... minds have kind of slowed down a little bit after you heard those commercials and everything, so we can continue with this. I know that was a lot of metaphysics in a short time, but that's what this show is about, right? It's about all that stuff that you really probably can't find anyplace else, and I don't know if anybody else is really teaching about it. So hopefully this is going to help, because I'm going to apply some of the things that I just said to the world and to world events and to the problems not between a police person and a home invader, but to our lives in general and to how interactions are taking place between countries and what we have to be concerned about. Okay? So let's continue on. So we have these three elements that really apply to how forces are developed. The spiritual use of force is to try to reduce the non-spiritual use of force. It generally requires, on a short order, for a short period of time, three times or more the power, if it's particularly dark or evil, that you're trying to overcome in terms of a very negative force. It also requires, if the time-space issues are out of kilter, a good deal of planning as well as creative planning in terms of effectively having a expression of energy that is at a frequency that is closer to the creation of our own creator. So you have to be creating in ways that are around and in the ways our Creator creates, so that your time and space issues in terms of the use of power are adequate and correct. And then finally, you need to have the right direction. You have to know that, number one, those that you're dealing with don't have a better perspective on your direction than you have on theirs. And you have to be able to, we have to be able to change the direction of the force that we use to counter and negate the forces that others that are destructive to life are using. Now, I realize there's some people who are very pacifistic and believe strongly in nonviolence. And the question then becomes this. Is it more violent to be a receiver of greater violence than the amount of force, which does produce some level of violence, to succumb and reduce those who are seeking to be destructive to us? I want you to think about that if you're a pacifist, because you don't have a choice but to either experience the violence of others or to reduce the violence overall by using some level of force, which you might call violence, in the process. And if you choose the former, then you are a violent person, because we're all one, and you're allowing others who are dark and selfish and destructive to be violent to you and other people and other forms of life without preventing it. And if you think that that is the correct way to do it, then you have to go back to your original belief in believing in either nonviolence or at least less violence, because you can't choose a nonviolent way of life when others are seeking to do violence to you and other people and other things. Okay? So you think about that, because that's a really important issue. And I know that that's one of those philosophical things. And I have a great deal of appreciation and admiration for people who don't like violence, but I don't believe and I don't think that it's appropriate to be completely nonviolent, because there is no such thing, or you only invite violence from others at a greater rate in some circumstances. And the object is to reduce violence to its minimal level. That I'll buy. So I'm a minimal violence person, but not a nonviolent person, because there isn't such a thing. It's just an illusion in this world. There might be places in the universe we could live where that would be true. There are sacred planets, places where violence has no longer any place, but it's not here. Believe me, it's definitely not on Earth. Okay, so now we have to then look at, if we're assuming we're minimal violent people, those of us who are listening, and that's a spiritual principle, we try to reduce it to the minimal level, net level, that's the level that others do unto us and we must do unto them to prevent them from doing unto us and to others, then there's a critical element here. And that is that we have to use the principles of force in order to create a spiritual circumstance when others are trying to be violent towards us. Let's take an example in terms of the world. And this is very timely, because today the newly elected, although he was prime minister before, 10 years ago, but the newly elected prime minister of Israel stated that he would give a number of months, 3 to 6 people are saying, I don't know the exact time schedule, but for the U.S. and our present president to try to resolve the violent suggestions that are being made by the country of Iran towards their country, which is Israel. And they're saying, okay, we'll wait maybe to the fall and see how things go. And if you can't get these people to stop making nuclear weapons that they claim they're going to use at some point to annihilate us, because they don't want us to exist, they don't believe we should exist, then we would have to do something about it. And what we're going to do is going to be an act of violence and force. So that's what it's going to be. And then the question becomes, what is the appropriate thing to do? Because there has to be an abatement of the amount of force that can be used by someone who says they're going to, their ultimate goal is to destroy you. In other words, it's some people call it an existential issue. And the interesting thing is that this isn't a debatable issue, a question, because the leaders of Iran have stated that that is their, one of their goals, is to eliminate Israel, to get rid of it, because they don't believe it has a right to exist. They don't say when they might exercise that option. The problem is when someone says that is one of their goals, once they have the ability to do it, it doesn't really matter any longer when they choose, because it's a win thing. It's not an if anymore, because they've already stated their objective. And that's a problem. That puts a real a kibosh on the ability to come up with a reasonable alternative. But that is up to us, the United States, and possibly some other countries, to try to effectuate before Israel believes that they have an existential problem and they are going to exercise their freedom to use spiritual force, we hope, in resolving the problem. And what kind of spiritual force would that require? It will require the elimination of the potential force that Iran is developing that could destroy this other country. Well, the only force that can do that is a weapon of mass destruction. You can't use just conventional weapons with troops, because the likelihood of success is low and the time scale is very long, and others can come in to interdict and prevent it from happening, including Israel itself. But if you use a weapon of mass destruction, the time factor is so incredibly short that the potential for destruction is high. Now, if you use some type of biological weapons, it could be matters of days or weeks. If you use gas weapons, it could be matters of minutes or hours. And if you use nuclear weapons, it's a few seconds. You can see that as you shorten the time, the power factor, remember I told you about the power, goes way up. And the more the power employed in a shorter period of time, the more dangerous the outcome. Unfortunately, Iran at this time, to the best of our knowledge, and we don't really know absolutely, but is attempting to develop at least the most of their efforts is in the arena of nuclear weapons, which, again, have the shortest time and the most amount of power, and therefore are the most violent form of aggression. And therefore, now that, let's say that you're the Israelis and you're looking at this problem and you're saying to yourself, well, how do I solve this? Because I want to be spiritual in the use of force, which means I want to use the least amount of force necessary to prevent this existential amount of force that my adversarial nation, you know, 1,000 miles away from me, well, it's less than that, maybe 500-600 miles away from me, is seeking to use on me. And so what can I do? And the answer, interestingly, is no different than for the police person in the home invasion, or for any of us if we were attacked in unusual circumstances, or if there are just, you know, a multitude of different issues that could arise. You look at what is required to completely negate the force that would be existential in destroying the entire country of Israel. And what would be required is to destroy the infrastructure necessary to complete the production of nuclear weapons. Whatever that total amount is, I think there's about 13 locations that are right now known to be making nuclear materials in Iran. And so you would have to destroy the infrastructure, those specific locations, with the least amount of destruction to life in general. You wouldn't want to use the greatest force, which would be a nuclear weapon, on each one of these 13 places, because if you did, it would get rid of it for sure. But the amount of force would be too great, and you would have fallout, and you would have a tremendous amount of collateral damage that might be, foolish to do. And that's assuming the Israelis have nuclear weapons, and I think they do, but that's my opinion. And so let's say the better alternative then for them is to use some kind of very serious types of missiles, bombs, whatever, that destroy the infrastructure at a time of day and in a certain way, that the least amount of people and other life forms are killed, and the least amount of other types of destruction except to the place that you're trying to destroy is exercised on. That would kind of make sense and actually would be the most spiritual use of force in that kind of circumstance, and that's assuming that all other means of attempting to change the direction of the Iranians, direction is very important, in their use of force were employed, including trying to convince them that maybe Israel does have a right to exist, or if you don't want to call it a right, you're just going to leave them alone, you're not going to bother them, something like that. And it has to be credible. And the only way it could be credible is to not be using the facilities to create weapons. And unfortunately, we don't have an absolute way to know how much that's really taking place every second. We just have to take general ideas and apply them. Let's go to another issue, because I like these kind of political ones because they are so big. Then I want to try to narrow it to our personal life if I have time, and I'm looking at my clock. Oh, my. Okay, but let's talk about North Korea. Tomorrow, it is likely North Korea is going to set off a missile, a new kind of missile that they've developed. The first one they tried a few years ago blew up. And this missile is capable of going almost 5,000 miles. It could reach parts of the western part of the United States. It could obviously reach other countries besides that. And they are putting up this missile with a little Sputnik-like satellite or whatever to make it, to make it look like it's some kind of a good thing that they're doing. It's, we're putting up a communication satellite or something. But that's not true. They're actually advertising their missiles for others to buy. And they're also advertising their ability to wage destructive violence on those that they don't like, including the United States, by this demonstration. That's what they're doing. They're saying, hey, we're going to have these for sale. Look, here goes one. Let's see if you want to buy some. And if you don't want to buy one, in the meantime, hey, you guys in the United States, you better watch it from now on, because we know a few cities on the West Coast that could be terminated with our nuclear weapons and our missile. So what do you do in that situation? My suggestion is, since we have some kind of super weapons that we don't talk much about, is that we use like a laser type of device and clandestinely shine it on our friendly missile as it goes up and blow it up. Maybe we did that 3 or 4 years ago, nobody even knows. And then they'll just think they had a failure. Interestingly, that defeats almost all of their wishes by doing that, because everybody's going to think that, well, they can't build a missile over there if they try. And it also, even though the government of North Korea may know better, they're not going to probably say much about it either, because they don't want to admit we might have such a weapon, if we, in fact, we do, which I believe we do, by the way. But in any case, that's what I would do. I would make it look like, oh, we didn't do anything. It must have blown up on its own. Yeah. There's other kind of weapons that we have that just, like, shoot little BBs, or you know, not that small, but like ball bearings at this thing as it's rising, and it'll blow it up. And other kinds of things that we can use. I think it's important to recognize that doing nothing could be a serious problem, because although they don't have a lot of these, if they have two or three even, but, and they probably only have 10 nuclear weapons, but that's enough to create a serious problem. It's not an existential one like with Israel, but it is one of significant threat. So should we use force? I believe so. Should the force be used in a way that is tricky? That has to do with that time and space thing business. And that is also fast. They might not even know it hit them. It might only take 2 seconds or a quarter of a second or something. Yes. And should we use maybe some high-intensity microwaves if we don't use lasers to wreck its guidance system? Maybe. But then maybe it'll come down in Japan or something. We wouldn't want that. You know. So, I mean, you got to be careful. You know, you don't want to just screw it up to the point where it maybe does some real harm. But in any rate, we could do something, and we should do something. Because, again, this is being used for very dark purposes on their part, and we would try to use the least amount of violence to prevent a future violence of much greater magnitude. Okay. So what about then, why can't we just go in and just invade all these countries and take them over because they're bad and everything else? Why isn't that an okay thing to do? And it's the same reason you don't want to use force just randomly in your life on others that look like they're no good nicks and they deserve it. It's because you have to have a clear and present danger. You have to have something that is significantly obvious to yourself and to some others, so that the force that is being used can be truly used as seen as a force of goodness rather than a random act of violence, you see. And if you start going in and just using force because maybe 10 years from now there's going to be a problem, or you think there might be a problem but you don't have enough proof of it, you don't really understand what's going on, you can't make a huge mistake. And that mistake can be just as damaging than the violence of the original perpetrator. So preemptive striking has the greatest level of testing, the greatest level of necessity in understanding and in consciousness, which are basically the same thing, on the part of those using it. So in our daily lives, we must be prepared to be testing continually anytime we are exercising any spiritual use of force. Wisdom is extremely important. If we don't have the wisdom, it's better to suffer the consequences of defeat and failure than to exercise an error on the side of atrocity and misuse of what should be the spiritual use of force. We need to have truly a measured approach. Now, that may go out the window under circumstances where the other side is sudden and there is no time to make a choice. There is no time to be able to do. Then you do the best you can. Called self-survival, and we all have a right to it. It's one of the freedoms that we enjoy. So I want you to consider that. Okay, we're running out of time. I just want to mention that on April 20th, Mimi is going to be talking about the mental realm over borders in Mesa. So if you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area, go listen to her on April 20th. And I'm going to have to sign off right now, but stay tuned for the next minute or so and listen to the end commercial. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.
People ask Leo Kim why he wrote Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality.
He wrote it to empower you, to explain how you can discover the spiritual you, reveal your passions, realize your purpose, and find greater happiness in life, how to deal with death and illness of friends and loved ones, and to tell you about the healing mind, how changing your mind can and does change your brain, your health, and your life. Spiritual teachings, when merged with 21st century scientific teachings, will transform our lives. Leo Kim wanted to write in layman's terms for the non-scientists on what exciting benefits will occur in the 21st century when we heal the rift between science and spirituality. Buy Healing the Rift at bookstores, Amazon, or email him for a discounted copy at leo@healingtheriftbook.com.